It's Wednesday, June 17th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. We've got lots of announcements here to start off our daily audio stash. Most importantly, the note to catch tonight's episode of Anderson Cooper 360, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and his special, America's High, the Case for and Against Pot. I'm particularly pleased about today's episode of this week-long series because it's going to feature my good friend Madeline Martinez, the executive director of Oregon Normal and a member of the Normal Board of Directors, in an interview with CNN's Joe Johns. They're also going to be taking a look at the garden of our sponsor, the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, out there in Portland, Oregon, and interview Paul Stanford. So I'm really looking forward to the episode tonight on CNN. We also want to give you the dates and the place for the next Normal National Conference. This will be in San Francisco, California, September 24th, 25th, and 26th. That's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We've kind of rearranged things this year. On the Thursday, the 24th, that's going to be a day dedicated to cannabis, all about dispensaries and such. And then the 25th, 26th, the weekend, will be our regular Normal Conference with all the plenary and breakout sessions. We're also going to have a whole lot of Normal social events that you'll want to get involved with. So block those dates out on your calendar. It's at the Grand Hyatt Hotel in San Francisco, California, September 24th, 25th, and 26th. I also want to make a special announcement to the Normal chapters out there that are listening. We're going to have all sorts of deep discounts for chapter members and chapter leaders to attend this year's conference. And I've got a great presentation I'm putting forward on organizing your chapter. So check it out at the Normal National Conference. Also, our deputy director, Paul Armentano, wants to give you a note about his piece that's appearing right now on the Hill's Congress blog. This is the blog read by all the movers and shakers in Washington, D.C. It's at blog.thehill.com, and he particularly addresses Representative Kirk from Illinois, who thinks it's a good idea to set up 25-year mandatory minimums for first-time traffickers of kush, of very potent marijuana, that is. Also, shout outs to some activists out there who are trying to get involved with Normal and need your help. They want to set up Normal chapters in places that don't have them, and we need 5 people to form a board. So if you're living in the state of Delaware, send me an email to chapters@normal.org. Juneau, Alaska has emailed wanting to get a chapter started in Alaska's state capital. We've got activists in Las Vegas who want to form a local chapter of Las Vegas Normal to help along with Nevada Normal. We've got college activists at Herbage's favorite college, the University of Alabama. They want to start a Crimson Tide chapter. And probably my favorite email this week, activists in the United States Virgin Islands who want to start Virgin Islands Normal. I think that chapter is going to need a special attention from the chapter outreach coordinator, who may have to fly out there to make sure that everything's okay. So if you're in any of those areas or an area that doesn't have a local Normal chapter, wherever it may be, send me an email to chapters@normal.org. We'll see what we can do to get your area organized to end adult marijuana prohibition. Now, coming up in today's Daily Audio Stash, we've got your hemp headlines, leading with the sad story from Maryland of another dog murdered in a police raid for marijuana. We've got some reefer madness coming out of Fox News, having to do with a United Kingdom report on marijuana damaging your DNA. You've really got to hear this one. And my own commentary called Come Out Wherever You Are, comparing the gay rights movement and the cannabis rights movement. Today is Wednesday, so that means it's time for some cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. He's going to be on talking about a new study that takes a look at the smoking of blunts. Tam is back from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, the sponsors of our daily Toker Tunes, and she's going to feature on this Reggae Wednesday, Don DeMann. And in our second interview segment, we're going to catch up from last Friday. We were unable to do our regular High Times issue preview with Dave Bienenstock, the executive senior editor there. He was out at the Bonnaroo Music Festival. So we caught up with him today, his first day back in the office, so he could give us a look at the August issue of High Times magazine on your newsstands now. I'm beginning to plan all my destinations for this year's Summer of Bud. Looks like I might get a chance to go down to San Bernardino in the middle of July for the Purple Haze Music Festival. Folks, if you'd like me to come around to your neck of the woods, give a speech, talk at an event, or whatever, all I need is plane tickets and a place to crash. So send me an email at stash@normal.org. Together, we can end adult marijuana prohibition. But right now, it's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Home destroyed and dog murdered, but no marijuana found in police raid. Baltimore, Maryland. Quote, they shot through the door in front of screaming children that were begging them to let the dog out, and she was cowering in there, said homeowner Karina Amato. They shot through the door, and she ran upstairs in the bedroom, and they went up there and pumped AK-47 shots into her in my bedroom, end quote. Amato's boyfriend, Rick Johnson, said, quote, this is the bullet hole where they shot my dog, as he pointed to a splintered hole in the bedroom's wood floor. There was a pile of guts and blood right up underneath the bed, end quote. Police destroyed the front door, and now the couple must nail up pieces of plywood to secure their home, or what's left of it. The living room is unlivable, the bedroom furniture splintered, and the office has been turned upside down, not to mention tearing holes in the walls, shattering the porcelain bathroom, and ripping apart the music room. The search turned up plenty of herbs Amato had growing in her sunroom, but not the one a confidential informant suggested they would find, marijuana. This could be you. A confidential informant, a snitch, often will tell police what they want to hear in exchange for leniency for their own crimes. The police, following the standard operating procedure, will approach your home as if you're Tony Montana from Scarface, lying in wait for the police with a few of your little friends. They're armed to the teeth and armored against the attack they have been trained to believe you will engage in once they burst through your door late at night without knocking. They will destroy your property, smash your TV, slash your furniture, break your electronics, and ruin your home, so they can impress upon you that you are a no-good drug dealer and they've made your drug dealer life miserable. And God help you if you have a dog, even if it's a black lab or a dachshund or a chihuahua, because they are trained to believe all dogs are pit bulls or Rottweilers ready to attack police and must be shot immediately, if not to protect themselves, then to impress upon you no-good drug dealer types that they have the power to kill, and next time it might be your wife instead of your dog. This is how, in the land of the free, we deal with our fellow free citizens suspected of planting the wrong herb indoors. We don't even need proof. The word of a criminal is reason enough to spend your tax dollars on a violent and destructive urban military assault on your castle. The final line of the story is the most amusing. No one has been charged, and the department has neither apologized nor offered any restitution for killing their dog or trashing their home. Apology? Restitution? For what? In the police's eyes, they did nothing wrong. They followed standard procedure in enforcing prohibition laws. The snitch may have made a mistake, but not the cops. How could they have known there would be no contraband? Unless they broke all the furniture, tore holes in the walls, and destroyed the bathroom to be sure it wasn't hidden. So what if two innocent people had their home destroyed and their beloved pet murdered in front of their terrified children? That's the unavoidable cost of fighting the drug war. There's always collateral damage in a war. My fantasy hope is that when these cops who kill dogs go to hell, Cerberus is waiting for them with the ghosts of all the slain canines, and all cop scrotums smell and taste like peanut butter for eternity.
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Madness. Cannabis damages your DNA. I wrote about it yesterday, but now the latest pot propaganda has hit Fox News. So let's have at it, shall we?
Researchers at the University of Leicester in England have found convincing evidence that pot smoke damages DNA in ways that could potentially increase the risk for cancer. Quote, "There have been many studies on the toxicity of tobacco smoke," said researcher Rajinder Singh in a news release. "Cannabis, in contrast, has not been so well studied," end quote.
I guess 17,000 peer-reviewed scientific studies on cannabis's medical efficacy and relative harmlessness counts as not been so well studied.
Singh said cannabis smoke contains 400 compounds, including 60 cannabinoids. It also contains 50% more carcinogenic polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, including naphthalene, benzathracene, and benzopyrene, than tobacco smoke, Singh added.
However, marijuana smoke also contains cannabinoids such as delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol and cannabidiol, which are non-carcinogenic and demonstrate anti-cancer properties in vivo and in vitro. By contrast, nicotine promotes the development of cancer cells and their blood supply. In addition, cannabinoids stimulate other biological activities and responses that may mitigate the carcinogenic effects of smoke, such as downregulating the inflammatory arm of the immune system that is responsible for producing potentially carcinogenic free radicals, the unstable atoms that are believed to accelerate the progression of cancer. normal deputy director Paul Armentano notes.
In the journal Chemical Research in Toxicology, the scientists described the development of a new method that provides a clear indication that cannabis smoke damages DNA under laboratory conditions. Quote, the smoking of 3 to 4 cannabis cigarettes a day is associated with the same degree of damage to bronchial mucous membranes as 20 or more tobacco cigarettes a day, end quote, the team wrote in the journal. The researchers concluded, quote, these results provide evidence for the DNA damaging potential of cannabis smoke, implying that the consumption of cannabis cigarettes may be detrimental to human health, with the possibility to initiate cancer development, end quote.
UCLA pulmonologist Dr. Donald Tashkin, who has studied marijuana's effects on the lungs for 3 decades, studied heavy marijuana smokers to determine whether the use led to increased risk of lung cancer and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD. He hypothesized that there would be a definitive link between cancer and marijuana smoking, but the results proved otherwise. Tashkin says, quote, early on, when our research appeared as if there would be a negative impact on lung health, I was opposed to legalization because I thought it would lead to increased use and that would lead to increased health effects. But at this point, I'd be in favor of legalization. I wouldn't encourage anybody to smoke any substances, but I don't think it should be stigmatized as an illegal substance. Tobacco smoking causes far more harm. And in terms of an intoxicant, alcohol causes far more harm. End quote. Come out wherever you are. From FairfieldWeekly.com. In the past decade and a half, 13 states have legalized medical marijuana. A steady drip that is somewhat analogous, in its suddenness and once-seeming improbability, to the snowballing momentum of gay marriage rulings over the past several months. Ethan Nadelman from Drug Policy Alliance says, quote, there's a powerful analogy between the gay rights movement and the marijuana law reform movement. Part of it is about a principle that people should not be punished for what they do in their own home or their own personal lives. The other point is that there's an element of coming out that is pivotal to the whole process of decriminalizing and ultimately legalizing the behavior, end quote. Atlantic writer Andrew Sullivan has done a fine job of hammering this point again and again over the past couple months on his blog, The Daily Dish, both with his own thoughtful analysis and in a series of posts tagged The Cannabis Closet, in which he publishes mostly anonymous responses from his readers. Contract manager with a government agency and treasurer for the PTA, one describes himself. If I got busted, I'd lose a lot, writes another. Nadelman says, quote, I truly believe that if marijuana users felt as emboldened to come out as gay and lesbian people did some years ago, marijuana prohibition would come crashing down very quickly, end quote. The problem is that, quote, it's hard to get people to come out of the closet about something that does remain a crime, end quote. That's one thing I always point out in the gay rights cannabis closet analogy. While gay folks could lose their jobs, homes, and upset their families and friends when they come out of the closet, we face all of that too, plus arrest and incarceration and a lifetime with a criminal record. While homosexual sodomy remained a crime in some states prior to the Supreme Court's Lawrence v. Texas decision, there was no mandatory workplace pee test that could determine with whom and how you had sex the night before. Even if you came out as openly gay, you could not be arrested for it unless you were caught having sex with a man. Thus, we have the unique dilemma of being not only a large invisible minority, but also one that can be arrested. So we have the people with the least to lose coming out of the closet. They tend to be your creative types, your night workers, your temps, the self-employed, students, and so on. They're beautiful people, and I'm proud to represent their inalienable rights. But let's face it, they also present tie-dye, patchouli, long hair, dreadlocks, multiple facial piercings, tattoo sleeves, tattooed necks, shower optional, and other outward symbols of rebellion and counterculture. the closeted PTA mom or corporate dad who smokes pot, the ones who represent the majority of closeted cannabis consumers, already weren't coming out because of fears of losing status or a job or even being arrested. And when they see the people who are out, they fear being lumped in with the counterculture stereotypes. "I like smoking pot every day," I've heard more than one say, "but I'm not a stoner." Surely the gay rights movement faces this dilemma too, when you think of the leather chaps clad bare-chested boy hunks usually seen in a gay rights parade. Often, the people out of the closet about their gayness are the people whose closet doors were made of glass anyway. Everybody knew they were gay but them. But as time marched on and people saw more positive portrayals of gays and lesbians in film and TV, the out-of-the-closet gays became more and more like the majority of gay people, which is to say more mainstream and less gay pride parade. I think we will see the same phenomenon with the cannabis closet. Already, the portrayals of the pot smoker have become more and more mainstream. We've gone from the burnouts of Cheech and Chong to the honor students of Harold and Kumar. We've gone from the deadly reefers on Dragnet to a friendly stoner circle on That 70s Show. More films and TV series are showing pot smoking without any moralizing or even noticing the pot smoking. The character smokes a joint, but the show isn't about a joint-smoking character. As more of us come out of the cannabis closet, the images change. And as the images change, more people come out of the closet. P.S. To be fair, we stoners don't have roving bands of drunken idiots following us out of bars to track us and beat us to a pulp and tie us to a fence post in Wyoming to let us die. We don't have churchgoers from Kansas who show up to our funerals with signs telling us God hates us. We don't have legislatures and states fighting against our right to marry whom we love. Civil rights aren't a zero-sum game, and I don't mean to imply that any one group's struggle is better, worse, harder, or easier than any other's.
There were 765,000 marijuana arrests in 2007. That's not for dealers and kingpins, no, that's just for simple possession. Multiply that by the average cost of each arrest, and what have you got? $7.6 billion spent on people just smoking some pot. That's enough money to buy health insurance for every child that needs it. That's enough cash to adopt every stray dog and enough left over to feed it. Mr. Obama, I kinda wrote this song for you. You got my vote for change. Now let's see what you can do.
Visit normal.org today. Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid, and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. All right, folks, after a long break, we're back with our cannabis science segment featuring Dr. Mitch Earlywine from the University of New York at Albany. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
All right. So we've been away for a while, and the scientists are still out there studying everything we need to know about cannabis and the way people use it. And one of the most popular ways that people are using cannabis, especially in the cities and among younger folks, is through the use of blunts. This, of course, is where they take a cigar or cigarillo type thing, and they take out the tobacco and they stuff in cannabis. And we've always been kind of curious about what health effects this might have. And Dr. Mitch is here to tell us about a new study regarding this. So, doctor, what is the story here with these blunts? Should we be worried?
Well, I've been asked this for a long time and always been a little concerned because of the way blunts are made, that the exposure to tobacco might lead to, you know, some potential respiratory problems that you wouldn't get with just good old marijuana. Obviously, I'm still a huge fan of the vaporizer, but a neat study by Meg Haney, who's down at Columbia, basically had folks come in and they either smoked three puffs off a blunt or three puffs off a joint, which sounds like it must have been a pretty fun study to be in. They then asked them just, you know, how are they feeling, and they look at how much THC they've gotten into their blood, and looked at the carbon monoxide that ends up in their lungs under those circumstances. And the delight to some and the bane to others, the blunts do not do as well as the joints. The joints tend to have a higher THC concentration after smoking off of those, and the blunts tend to have actually more carbon monoxide, the gas that you see in cigarettes. So I feel like it's safe to say that blunts are probably not as good as joints when it comes to both efficient use of your cannabis as well as exposure to carbon monoxide.
And this is, we're talking about the blunts where they're just, it's a, they're wrapped up in the tobacco leaf. They're not mixing tobacco with the cannabis like they do, say, in Amsterdam.
Yeah, so this is not that Australian or European strategy where folks tend to just put tobacco in with everything. This really is just that it's rolled in one of those tobacco leaf cigar wrappers, which doesn't seem like it would be a whole lot of tobacco, but in fact, it turns out to make a big difference in this case. And from what folks are telling me, some folks are better at this strategy than others, so a lot of folks are leaving markedly more tobacco in their blunts than others. So I feel like this, in some ways, may be an underestimate of the differences, because this was literally just the tobacco leaf as a wrapper. It wasn't the way some people do, sort of pulling the tobacco out of a rolled cigar and then stuffing marijuana into the end.
Is there any theory as to why the THC absorption would be lower just because of the tobacco leaf wrapper?
There's some hypothesis, at least, that the blunt arrangement tends to filter out a whole lot of things and smoke a little cooler, which people tend to like. But unfortunately, by going through the tobacco leaf, some of that THC is also getting filtered out, so it ends up being less efficient than our good old classic joints.
What are some of the other problems with the use of tobacco mixed with cannabis? If we want to start talking about the people that really do like to mix the two, are there studies showing greater health damage from that?
Well, Bob Malamine has a great review in this in Harm Reduction Journal. Basically, the key difference, of course, is tobacco has nicotine and cannabis does not. And it seems like a relatively minor thing, given all the other gases in the smoke, but nicotine really tends to increase tumor growth. THC tends to decrease tumor growth. And the mechanism is a little complicated physiologically, but the bottom line is this is why, you know, folks like Don Tashkin, who've been following pot smokers for decades, find that people who use tobacco and cannabis together tend to have worse respiratory symptoms and risk for lung cancer than folks who use cannabis alone.
How do they compare to people that are just using tobacco alone? Does cannabis exacerbate any problems with tobacco?
At least in the samples we've seen so far, there is this odd synergistic effect that's kind of hard to explain in one study. But then in another study, the cannabis seemed to decrease the risk related to tobacco. I'm always reluctant to spread the word about that because I'm concerned people are going to get lulled into this false sense of security that somehow their cannabis use is going to protect them from the negative consequences of their tobacco use. And the data aren't strong and significant in that direction, but at least one study is sort of leaning in that direction, if you will, which is not a huge surprise given what we know about THC's ability to sort of keep tumor growth down.
Now, on another track here, I was wondering about, you know, people that are dealing with a nicotine addiction, people that smoke. Do you have any reports of people trying to cut their habit of tobacco by starting to mix tobacco and cannabis, or even trying to give up tobacco in favor of smoking cannabis?
I've got literally half a dozen anecdotal reports I can think of without thinking very hard. Perhaps including someone who used to host this show, and it isn't the most successful tack. Quitting tobacco is, not effortless, and I don't want to minimize that, and I know some folks are saying, you know, I kicked heroin and that was harder than this, but in truth, it can be done, and it's done all the time. The key, of course, is you can't just rely on one strategy. You have to really kick things in, so the most successful treatments tend to have people who fade to brands that are lower in nicotine, so they move towards the ones that aren't as strong. then they tend to restrict their smoking to only one location. So, you know, there's one room in your house where you smoke, and when you're there, you smoke and you only smoke. You don't smoke and watch TV. You don't smoke and talk on the phone. You don't do all those automatic things you would normally do. And often by making that restriction alone, people realize they don't like smoking as much as they thought. They like just being able to take a break and then gradually working down the number till you're down to two and down to one and eventually down to zero. The one thing that nobody seems to tell us about this is because you've got less nicotine in your system now, you're more sensitive to other stimulants, particularly caffeine. So many of my friends who are cigarette smokers also drink about a pot of coffee a day, and then later they quit smoking and say, oh my God, I'm so jittery. Well, in fact, it's not from nicotine withdrawal so much as caffeine overdose, if you will, because you're not metabolizing the caffeine as fast because the nicotine's no longer stimulating your system. So in fact, if you're going to cut down on nicotine, you actually can get by with markedly less caffeine, and you won't get that crazy jitteriness and then think, oh, it's tobacco withdrawal, and end up relapsing when really you didn't need to.
Huh. Well, that's really interesting. You mentioned that those anecdotal reports. I've got one myself, my father being a drug addict and alcoholic, and the last thing he was ever able to kick was cigarettes. Do you attribute that to how difficult the drug itself, nicotine, is to quit? Is it attributable to the social cues that you know, people get used to having a smoke when they take a break or a smoke when they do a certain activity? Is there any realistic science that says this is really harder to kick than heroin, or is it just because it's legal?
So, in fact, a chapter that Bob Gore and I did on in my book Pot Politics suggests that most people recognize that nicotine is more addictive than just damn near anything else we have. But the thing to keep in mind, too, is when you're a nicotine user, odds are high you've done literally thousands of hits. You know, if you're smoking 20 cigarettes a day, that's literally almost every waking moment getting a little hit of nicotine every few minutes. Nobody shoots heroin many times a day. And so this constant influx of the drug, of course, increases its ability to, make dependence. And so that's really part of the issue. I feel like if people are willing to cut themselves some slack when they're getting off of nicotine, particularly by getting a massage, taking on a little less extracurricular stuff, and just, you know, taking warm baths, exercise, and having a lot more fun, they often do a whole lot better than trying to still do everything they do, work just as hard and be just as wild, when, in fact, they're going through what's a very serious, genuine case of withdrawal.
You know, I think of that just because of the way that our opponents try to fight against legalization, as they say, you know, the problem with marijuana is X, and it'll be so much worse once it's legal because the cigarette manufacturers, why, they aimed at kids, and they learned how to package it, and they learned how to fix it so it was more addictive, and they seem to think this a similar thing would happen with cannabis. Is that just crazy thinking?
In fact, when you do polls of people about why don't you use cannabis, it's rarely because it's illegal. It's they're not interested, or they've tried it once and they didn't like the effects, or something along those lines. It's not, oh, gee, if I just had a legal source, I would just do it all the time. Mm. And in fact, as odd as prohibitionists may find the statement, damn near anybody who wants cannabis in the U.S. can find it. And so I feel like a tax and regulated market would obviously add controls that we don't have in the underground market, and really makes no sense to think that use is going to suddenly spike up simply because of a change in this regulation. Now, I know that McCune and some other folks point out that in the Netherlands, once commercialization hit, use rates did increase, but I feel like we've got a pretty good model with tobacco now on how that should work. So no, we're not going to have marijuana ads on TV. We're not going to have giant signs, get your cannabis here, up on the billboards. And odds are high it's really not going to create a spike, particularly in folks who would have no interest in using it anyway.
Yeah, it's like we like to point out here at Normal that the tobacco smoking rates are at their lowest rates ever, and we didn't have to arrest anyone or make tobacco illegal to achieve that.
All you do is spread the word about health consequences, and lo and behold, look what happened.
Yeah, people make the smart decisions. Well, Dr. Earlywine, we appreciate you joining us here on Wednesdays for our Cannabis Science segment. We look forward to the next bit of science we'll talk about, and we'll talk about that next week.
Great to be back on the show, man.
All right, thanks a lot.
Bye now.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. For Reggae Wednesday, we hear the popular artist Don DeMann and his great song, What a Thing. The song made the finals of the 2009 Global MMA Best Reggae and was given a special mention by the judges, who encouraged Don DeMann to enter next year's new category, Dance Hall. Don DeMann, based in the UK, is originally from Jamaica, which is where he first began to DJ. Now Don DeMann has hit the UK scene with his stamina sound and original flows. Don DeMann recently released his first album in Jamaica, Tek It To Them. He is promoting the album across the UK, performing shows in London, Leeds, Brighton, and more. Check out Don DeMann's unique style and great music at myspace.com/DonDeMann2K7. That's DonDeMann number 2K number 7. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Don DeMann with What a Thing.
Hello?
Yo, Rebel! Why the man am I deport me tomorrow in the star? Jano.
What? I thought your wedding on Monday. What happened?
Jano, Rebel. Hey, tell my wife some love her in the star. Jano.
Hello? Married Hello? On a Monday.
Done. Hello?
Get locked Hello? Up on a Friday. Get the booty up on a Sunday. What a thing, what a thing, what a thing.
Alive, alive, hard in a man. Let me get a look up like figure what England no man. Say them send me back a yard. Figure suffer like dog. Figure big, figure borrow. Hey, hey, hey. But I may reach Jamaica, them call me deportee. Deportee for sure. I where they call me. But you see they gon' call me deportee. Cause foreign hard in a man. Say it hard in a man.
Send me married pan a Monday. Get locked up on a Friday. Get the booty pan a Sunday. What a thing, what a thing, what a thing. Say me married on a Monday. Get locked up on a Friday. Get the booty on a Sunday.
You lie.
What a thing, what a thing, what a thing.
Rex, don't smoke ombre.
boy, he married on Monday. Swap the song, say deported him Sunday. My comrade, see the system, not like me. When you land back down on the island, write me. All the while the DTI try, look for your ID. But me not like them brother, and them brother, them not like me. High society, while we're here struggling. Done the man, land up on the next plane, coming in.
Say me get the visa, tell her fi buy me a ticket, me a come next week. On the edge I make a flight and tell Rebel fi come pick me up.
Rebel come pick me up.
Say me reach a eat row with smile pa me face. Say me want fi see me friend and me family them. Say me reach back again in a the ice island again. Say them can't call me no more deported.
Say me married pan a Monday.
Of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana, and over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORMA. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORMAL, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Since 1970, NORMAL has been fighting for the rights of all adults who use cannabis responsibly. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has been the chronicle of the cannabis community. Every second Friday of the month, we bring that working relationship to the NORMAL Daily Audio Stash with our special guest, Senior Editor Dave Bienenstock, author of the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook, for our exclusive monthly preview of this month's issue of High Times.
Okay, folks, if you've been following the Stash, you realize that on the second Friday of the month, we have an interview with Dave Bienenstock, the editor at High Times Magazine. But last Friday, we weren't able to get to that interview because somebody had to go to Bonnaroo. And that somebody is joining us here today. Dave, welcome back to the Stash.
Hi, Russ, and hi, everybody out in Normal Land.
So you got to confirm for us that your going to Bonnaroo was much more important than doing our interview. So how was Bonnaroo?
Bonnaroo was fantastic. I'm a guy who saw fish a lot back in the day, and I could definitely tell my fellow fish heads that they were playing fantastically well. And the rest of the festival, it's a great time, and I guess I can safely say it's one of the best places to smoke a joint in America, because you have a great music, good people, and you know, it's a great place to see how great America will be when pot is legalized.
No doubt.
We can have events like that all over the world.
Yeah. Now, they have that at regularly scheduled times. It's always the same time every year?
Bonnaroo, it's always in June.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think it's different weekends in June.
Okay. Well, just teasing you a little bit about missing the interview. We definitely wanted you to get out to Bonnaroo, and we've got you here now, so no harm, no foul, right? Let's talk a little bit about the next issue of High Times coming up. This will be the August issue, and what are we focusing on in this issue?
Well, I'm looking at the cover right now, and it's half seeds and half beautiful buds. And, you know, everybody who knows about growing knows it starts with either seeds or clones. And this month we're looking at 25 of the top seed banks in the world. And we hear a lot from our readers, who are also growers that, you know, finding high quality seeds in this, in, you know, during this prohibition time is both very difficult and very important. And so we're really pointing to the places that have good reputations that are in our seed bank hall of fame, or some, even some newer seed banks that we just, you know, we hear all the feedback from our readers. So we're basically sharing that with everyone who's reliable places to get really high quality cannabis seeds.
Right on. Now, do you go into any detail about the differences between, you know, growing from clones versus growing from seeds?
Well, we actually have a separate story in the same issue, where one of our writers went out to Spain, and what's interesting in the growing scene in Spain is they're much more into seeds than clones. Seeds are much more readily available in Spain. You can buy them over the counter at a lot of places. So you don't see as many people doing clones out there as you do starting with seeds. There's obviously, as everyone knows, there's pros and cons to both. Danny Danko would be your better source, but quickly I can say, you know, clones, you know, everything is going to be a female. You don't have to go through the germination phase, so you can get to yielding much quicker. Some of the advantages with seeds are that the plants may be hardier, that you are going to grow the males and the females and pick only the elite females to grow. So there's advantages and disadvantages to both of them, and our writer definitely got into that on his trip to Spain, and also just looks at some of the different techniques that are popular in Europe for growing that may be applied to gardens here. And especially some interesting new techniques.
Okay. And let's look at the cannabis community a little bit, too. You guys are always covering the latest things that are going on with respect to, like, awards and festivals and events. Anything like that in this month's issue?
Well, we have our annual music awards, which were held down in Austin, Texas. I was lucky enough to attend. It was really a great time. We have it every year during the South by Southwest Festival, which is like a big music industry thing, and it's very, like, you know, people twittering in line on their, you know, their big music industry, people trying to get into the latest show, and we sort of throw this down home high time style party, and the crowd that shows up, or they finally stop networking and talking about themselves and just smoke a joint and listen to some good music and relax, and we do the music awards there. And this year we gave our Lifetime Achievement Award to Johnny Winter, and we also have a feature interview with him in the magazine, just a legendary blues guitarist and now a medical marijuana user as well.
Oh, okay. That sounds good. And another topic that gets, and I'm just looking at the issue myself since I just got it in the mail, that I'm really glad you're covering here, is the confluence of pot and religion. What is this article looking at?
The article is really looking at, you know, what role cannabis played in the early days of the world's major religions. And it's a story that's long, and it's very interesting. It's very well sourced. It's a little tough to summarize quickly, but I think, you know, the early days of these religions are influenced by cannabis use is something that a lot of people have written about and thought about, and what this article does is sort of bring that whole story together in a way and show, I mean, the article is called The Big Bang, with bang spelled B-H-A-N-G, which is a very old way of ingesting cannabis through a drink. And so that's the story, is basically what role cannabis played in these religions.
Okay, great. And you also have a lot of product reviews here in the magazine. You talk about a lot of different things. Anything that pops out this month for you as far as a new product that's out there?
You know, we are seeing a really tremendous amount of innovation in the hemp products world. As you can see, we got everything from soaps and shampoos to drinks to snacks, And I think, you know, one of the things people may not realize is that hemp seeds are one of the most nutritious foods and well-balanced foods in the world. And there are many, many people who either they smoke pot or they don't smoke pot, but they're extremely interested in healthy eating will tell you that about hemp seeds. So it's not like a gimmick of just, oh, this food has hemp in it, and so stoners will like it. Mm-hmm. If you really are into nutrition, omega-3s, I'm putting quotes in the air here in the studio over fatty acids, but hemp is a fantastic food, and it also, you know, used in all these other products. So we did a little roundup of some of the best stuff that's out there.
Okay, great. I'm noticing a couple, just flipping through the magazine here and noticing a couple other things that caught my eye. I love the, you got the pictures of the normal tax protest and this great picture from the, we posted this on the Stash blog as well from Trevor Trittman, who had the bong picture with John Ashcroft. That's worth the price of the magazine right there, if you ask me.
Oh, that is fantastic. I just emailed him today to tell him I'm sending him his copy, and he's very excited. Something else we have is under the title of Hemployment Opportunity is, you know, High Times is looking for a someone to come up and be sort of our editor for a week and get the High Times experience, and all the information about how you can apply is in the magazine. So people should definitely, you know, I get that email all the time. how can I get a job at High Times? And unfortunately, the answer is almost always, you know, we're not hiring.
Yeah.
And this is not a full-time job, but it's more like a contest, but it'll be a lot of fun for the person who gets picked.
All right. Well, check out the contest in this month's edition of High Times Magazine, the August edition. It says August 403 on the side. Is this the 403rd edition?
We're getting close to the big one.
That's what I'm thinking here. I've got a couple of years to go.
This November will be our 35th anniversary issue, which we're really putting a lot of work. We just had a meeting just now. We're putting a lot of work into it. We want to make it really special. And then I would say the next big special issue after that will be our 420th.
All right. Well, when everybody go out and get your copy of High Times on the newsstands now. It's also available as a digital edition at hightimes.com. And David Bienenstock is the senior editor for High Times Magazine, joins us on the second Friday of every month, unless there's a Bonnaroo Festival. So
Bonnaroo!
Thanks a lot, David. We appreciate you joining us.
All right. Thanks, Russ. Always a pleasure.
All right. Take it easy.
Bye.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook blows all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today in a hurry,
because I got to run out to Madeline's place so that we can watch that CNN together. I hope you will too. Anderson Cooper 360 on CNN, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, don't forget our shout-outs to Delaware, Las Vegas, University of Alabama, Juneau, Alaska, United States Virgin Islands, and anyone out there looking to form a normal chapter in your area, send me an email to chapters@normal.org. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.